Perek Gimel in Megillas Esther. Achar the Rime Elagido and Melech Achashverosh's Haman Ben Amidoso Agagi. So after all these things that have happened, right, after Bigson and Seresh especially, it happened to be that the king Achashverosh raised up Haman Ben Amidoso Agagi. Now, we had already said that the person Memuchan that we'd had before, according to Chazal, is referring to Haman himself, which means that he was the seventh of the seven Roi Pnei Melech, the people that were sitting in front of the king. Now he was lifted up. His throne was placed above all the other sarim that were with him. Now, that means the reason why, simple reason why, is because Haman was a tremendous person. He had a tremendous chacham, and his suggestion about Vashti eventually came to fruition in the appearance of Esther, and that was a good thing in Achashverosh's eyes. Once he saw that, he realized this person is a good person, and that's that. So this is the concept over here. Now, first of all, Haman was intimately involved in Bigson and Seresh's plot. If anybody ever found out what had happened with him, it was going to be really, really bad. Charvona actually told Achashverosh about the plot only later on. Charvona said he wanted you to be hung as well, and that he was involved in the plot with Bigson and Seresh, which is why Haman went so crazy about it. And that's why he was killed at the very end. However, Haman was not as known, and nobody knew about it yet, and Charvona kept himself quiet. Charvona didn't want to say anything whatsoever. If we do a quick calculation of how long Haman was in power, it seems that he was in his power for 70 days. 70 days completely. The first expression of his power was that he wanted to exterminate the Jews. And then afterward came out the letters that came afterward. But it was 70 days that he was in power for. All the servants of the king that were at the gate of the king, they would bow and bend their knees toward Haman. Right? That's what he would ride through. He had a tremendous amount of power and go through, etc. But that was what happened. That was what the king commanded for him. Mordechai would not bow down. If you look at the pasuk, it seems to say the word yichra, yishtachave, in future tense. He would not. Meaning people would go up to him and say, aren't you going to bow? And he said, I will not bow and I will not bend down to Haman. Meaning even in the future, no matter what happens, I'm never going to do it. The Kiddushas Levi says, and that this applies for all Jews in the future, that we won't bow down to anybody because Mordechai himself wouldn't do so. Mordechai wouldn't do so in front of Haman itself. Now, Haman had no reason to think that this was going to cause like a massive destruction of the Jews. No reason to think that way. Yes, Haman was a powerful man, but so too was Mordechai. Mordechai was up there in the king's kingdom, and some say he wasn't even commanded to bow down to Haman, that other people were, but he himself. But it seems that he made himself too public. When everybody else was bowing down, he made sure that everyone saw that he wasn't bowing down, and people noticed. And that wasn't the greatest thing in the world. He probably shouldn't have done anything like that. We all know that Mordechai had bought Haman as a slave, that somehow Haman and Mordechai knew each other. According to one medrash, they had been generals in the army when Achashverosh tried to take over India. Mordechai one side, Haman and the other. Haman ran out of rations while Mordechai had a ton of rations. Mordechai sold rations to Haman's part of the army only if Haman was willing to sell himself as a slave to Mordechai himself. Mordechai accepted him as a slave, and that's that. Others said that they were lost in a desert. That's a weird medrash, and that he sold them for a bunch of water, whatever it is. But obviously, he's not going to bow down to his own slave. He allowed Haman to live a life, right? Because he wasn't going to take it down. But Haman always knew that Mordechai sitting over there. It was pretty crazy. This happened, according to the medrash, in the year 368 before the Common Era, in the year 3393 in the Jewish years, the second year of Achashverosh's reign, when an Indian province went again, and that's when Mordechai and Haman went over there. Okay. The servants of the king that were by the gate of the king said to Mordechai, why are you going over? Why are you disobeying the king's instructions? Are you better than us? Right? What's going on over here? So Mordechai said, I have no desire to bow down, as we just said over there. And that's that. He said, wait a second. Yaakov, bow down to Esav, they said. So shouldn't you bow down? You, the child of Yaakov, bow down to the child of Esav. To which Mordechai said, Esav didn't have an Avodah Zarah that was hanging around his neck. Haman specifically had an Avodah Zarah so that people were bowing down. They were also bowing down to his God. I'm not going to bow down to him and his God when I'm bowing down to it. That's a shot. Plus, my ancestor never bowed. Binyamin never bowed to Haman. Because Binyamin never bowed to, Binyamin never bowed to Esav. Because Binyamin never bowed to Esav, I don't have to bow to Esav either. When he said this every single day, he wouldn't listen to them. They said to Haman, they wanted to see if the words of Mordechai would stand, because he told them that he was a Jew. Two ways of looking at that. Either number one, Mordechai said, I'm a Jew, I'm not bowing down to him. Or Mordechai said that Haman is my slave, and an Eved Kenani means he has a bris milah and went to the mikvah, so Haman's a Jew. Haman himself is a Jew. And that's the reason why I'm not bowing down to him, because he's technically Jewish. I'm not going to bow down to him for that reason. Either way, right, I'm not going to end up having it. And that's the idea. So, Vayar Haman, ki Mordechai korei v'shachavelo. Then Haman looked and saw that Mordechai wasn't bowing down to him. Up until this point, Haman held his head up high, his nose in the air. He wasn't looking at anybody. He just assumed that everybody was bowing down to him. Now he looked and he saw that Mordechai wasn't bowing down to him, making a show of it. Now he got upset by Yimalei Haman Chema. Haman was filled with absolutely anger. It's so funny because, according to the Medrash, Haman went up to Mordechai and said, Shalom Alecha, Mordechai, or said, peace upon you, in whatever language they were speaking. And Mordechai said, there is no peace for the Rishayim. You're an evil person. You belong to a Malik. There is no peace for somebody like you. You're going to be destroyed. To which, obviously, Haman got a little angry. Can you imagine? Can imagine that happening. Right? But that's exactly what happened over here. Haman eventually, and the problem was is that Mordechai was standing near the gate every single time Haman came by. So it's not like one time or whatever it is. Every single time Haman went in or went out or whatever it was, he saw Mordechai, and Mordechai refused to get up and didn't go. Now, Vayivez be'enav lishloach yad b'Mordechai. Oh, I should say, the reason why Mordechai was doing this and why he thought, because he didn't really think it was going to be Sakana, but the reason why he was going in is because he knew that the Jews had done a terrible sin by bowing down to Nebuchadnezzar's statue, even though the statue wasn't a Avodah Zarah. So he made a show of being willing to be Moser Nefesh, not to bow down to Haman himself. But Vayivez Benav Lishloach Yad Mordechai Levado, Haman didn't want to put his hand upon Mordechai himself. Ki Gidu Lo Osam Mordechai, because he said, they told him what people the Mordechai was from. Vayivakash Haman Lashmidas Kol Yehudim. Instead, Haman wanted to destroy his whole nation, all the Jews, Shebuchol Machos HaKavsherish, in Mordechai, together with Mordechai. Now, there is a Ben Ishchai that says there's a reason why he didn't want to go up against Mordechai alone. If somebody would go up to the king and say, this guy is not bowing down to me. So the law in the Persian kingdom, says the Ben Ishchai, was that if somebody discredits you or does something bad to you, not only does the guy get killed, but you get taken down from your position. Because they're going to say, why did that guy get killed? Oh, because he didn't bow down to Mordechai. And because that takes you down, you're going to go down as well. It's the same reason, by the way, why they had to get rid of Vashti. Vashti could have been killed, right, very easily for what she did to Ahasuerus. But the problem is, if you do that, then Ahasuerus has to be taken down because he was the one discredited. The same reason why Haman over here, Haman thought, I don't know what to do over here. But Chodesh HaRishon Chodesh Nisan Mishnah Shtei Mesrei LeMelech Ahasuerus, in the first month, which is the Chodesh of Nisan, in the 12th year of the King Ahasuerus, 12th year already, Hippo Puro Garol, he decided to make a lottery cast in front of Haman, Miyom Liyom LeChodesh LeChodesh, what day and what month, Shnei Masiru Chodesh Adar, this is the 12th month in the Chodesh Adar. I don't know exactly what he did over here. I've seen the whole thing where he had little things on the ground and little, like, almost like, what's that game where you, hopscotch? Right, we have like certain things on the ground, whatever it was, and then he threw rocks at it to see which date was going to be chosen, which month and which day, and whatever, and stuff like that. I've seen stuff like that, but I'm not sure if that was there. The reason why it was in Nisan, and the reason why all of this happened in Nisan is because it's an auspicious time. We know this is the time that we're going to be able to defeat our foes, and that's that. There's a famous one that, you know, on dice, right? Every die has one thing on the other side and one thing to the other side, right? So he threw out his throw, and he put out his throw, and it came out, the dice came out to Aleph Gimel Gimel. Aleph Gimel Gimel was Agag, 1, 3, and 3 for Agag. But we say V'nahapachu on Purim, right? So if you turn around the dice by Agag, right, 1 is a Vav, right? And the 3 is a Dalet, and the 3 is a Dalet, so it stood for David. So
why
he threw Agag.
Dalet?
4, and a dice, right? 1 is opposite of 6, 3 is opposite of 4, oh. 2 is opposite of 5, right? So that's what he ended up having. So when he threw it, instead of coming out with Agav and Ahapachu, it turned out to be David. It's amazing. Amazing grow over there. But regardless, that was the idea of what it was supposed to be. There's a lot more behind this, a lot of different things over here. The person who threw out the lottery was Shimshi, the actual son, Haman's son. He's the one that did everything over here. They went through every single month. They searched through every month of Jewish history, and they decided that other was the perfect choice because they saw that it was a time that nothing had happened up until that point. They knew that Moshe Rabbeinu had died during that day. They didn't realize that Moshe Rabbeinu was saved on that day, but that's that. He couldn't figure out exactly what it was. He realized it was 13th of Adar that it came out. He realized that even though Moshe Rabbeinu was born on the 7th of Adar, it would make sense for it to be the 13th of Adar. Maybe it was a little bit pushed off, etc. A lot of crazy things that happened over here. Haman went to the king Ahasuerus. Yeshno am achod. Mefuzim ufura bina amim. There is a nation. The pshat is, Yeshanu, he said to Ahasuerus. They have become antiquated in the eyes of God, and God does not love them as much anymore. Am achod. They're a unique nation, and they stay by themselves. They want nothing to do with other people. However, mefuzur mefurud. They're also scattered and separate from everybody else in that they're willing to be on their own. They don't need to come together. Beinu amim, between all the nations. B'chol medinos malchusecha. And they are everywhere within your malchus. They're not whatever. They are absolutely everywhere. So you're not going to make a korcha by taking all of the Jews from one part, and then all of a sudden that place is absolutely desolate. No, every single part of the kingdom is going to have this. V'dasem shonos micholam. Their laws are totally different from every nation. That's why people hate them, because their laws are so much different. They do their own thing. As dasem melech ha'inam osim. They don't want to do what the king wants them to do. If the king would tell them to go ahead and, I don't know, drink the wine that the king made, they would refuse because it's Yayin Akum and you're not allowed to drink Yayin Akum. They said they don't do our laws. There is no value to keep them. There is nothing you're going to gain by having these people around. That's what's going to happen over here. That was Haman's idea.
A king would know this if that was all true. Like, granted, he was the ruler over 127 provinces, but Haman's making it out to be such a big issue.
A Malik would know. I don't know if Ahasuerus the Persian knew. The Babylonians would know. The Persians had just come into power. I'm not so sure how much they knew about the Jews. How many Jews lived there? Remember, Shushan was a very, very... I mean, there were Jews there, obviously. Mordecai was there, etc. I don't know how many Jews they really knew about. But they were scattered throughout the kingdom. So they probably knew. Ahasuerus might have heard of them, but not known anything more about them. That's a possibility. Look, I find it weird, right? Because... Asher Higilem Asher Yehudi, that Mordechai had to tell them that he was Jewish. It sounds like even the people there didn't recognize Jewish clothing. It sounds like Mordechai was not well known.
Yeah, but he wasn't wearing Jewish clothing. He, like...
Stuff of the king?
Yeah.
Hard to say. Mordechai probably... I mean, we definitely the Jews wore different clothing at all times.
He was a man of wealth, wasn't he?
Not wealth, power.
Why are you assuming that they wore different clothing?
Well, Jews always wore different clothing. That's the only reason why. We've always had different clothing wherever we went. So it seems weird. Up until like 200 years ago, we were always distinctive in what we wore and what we did. Even in Arab lands, we could be told, you know, people were able to tell that we were Jews. So the assumption is that by Persia was the exact same way. We just forget because now we look like everybody else, that we wear the kippah. That changes us. Right? But by woman? Is that from that, the, you know, unless there's shetels?
I went to school on math where the kids just assumed that I was a doctor because I wore a kippah.
That's hilarious. Could have said a lawyer. Either way, but that's what he ended up saying over here. He goes through and talks about how much gaiva they have. Yimal melech tov. If for the king it's good, he should write to destroy the Maseres Alafim Kikar Kesef Eshkol Yidei Osei HaMelacha. I will then pay 10,000 Kikar Kesef. A Kikar is a large amount, right? I forgot how much it is. It's 300, what's it called? Shekel or something like that, right? But all together, Eshkol Yidei Osei HaMelacha, I will pay for those who do the bidding of the king, or that this work, Lahavi Yoginzei HaMelach, and it'll be deposited in the king's treasury. So this is what's going to happen over here. All you have to do is write it down, and that's that. Everything's going to be perfectly fine. Now, he specifically chose this amount, 10,000 kikar kesef, in order to combat the 600,000 half shekels that the Jews gave, 300,000 altogether. That was the point of what he was trying to do over here, but that's that. There's an amazing line that Ruchaim Volozhiner was one time walking through the streets on Purim, and he met up an old man, and the old man said to him, how do you know that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to destroy the Jews, that it was only that the seal to destroy the Jews was only written in mud and not in blood. That if it was in blood, it would not be able to be taken back. But since it's in mud, it could be erased. How do you know that? So Ruchaim Volozhiner said, I don't know. And he said, every time it says the word Melech in the Megillah without Ahasuerus behind it, it refers to the King Hashem. So if you look at the pasuk, Imal Melech Tov, if on the king it's good, Yikasev, write it, Lo Bidam, not in blood. Instead of La'abdom, Lo Bidam, not in blood, that it should be written in clay instead. So Chaim Volozhiner then told that to the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon said that old man was Eliyahu Hanavi, and that was 100% Emes. That's what he told him. Crazy, right? I think that's an awesome word. Anyway, that's that. And that goes through. So now, there is a famous line that Ahasuerus said over here. First, Ahasuerus was not convinced. He looked over at them, and the Gemara Megillah says, he looked over at Haman, and he said, wait, this has happened before. Paro tried killing them, Nebuchadnezzar tried killing them. Each one of them came to an ignominious death. Something horrible happened to them in the end. How do I know that I'm not going to have that exact same thing? Why wouldn't that happen to me? So,
wait, Ahasuerus said that?
Ahasuerus said it back to Haman.
Like,
this medrash would not go with what we're talking about, in which they wouldn't know. Ahasuerus would have known, or maybe this is referring to the Malach of Ahasuerus, to which Haman said, you have no worry whatsoever, no worries at all, you're going to see everything's going to be taken care of because yesh no amachad, that they're yeshanu, you don't have to worry about them whatsoever. So the king acquiesced. The Gemara even describes it as sort of like a guy who owns a mound and a guy who owns a, you know, like a pit. So the guy who owns the mound says, I want to sell you this mound, right? And the guy who has the pit says, you know what, just put it in my pit, right? And it's a wash. You don't have to pay me to take anything, right? I just want to go ahead and do this. I just want to get rid of it already. Like Ahasuerus also wanted to get rid of the Jews. He just didn't know how to do it. But Yosef Melech has tabato me'al yado. He took his ring off his hand. Ve'itna l'Haman ben Amadasa Agogi. And he gave it to Haman ben Amadasa Agogi. Tzor Yehudim, the enemy of the Jews over here. And that's that. Ve'yomar Melech Haman. Hakesen nasan loch. Keep the money, dude. The people, you can do with whatever you want. I don't want it to be that it's automatically one or the other, whatever it is. Whatever you wish to do with the people itself, you get to go ahead and do. No need to bribe me or to give me anything whatsoever. So the secretaries all called out in the 13th day of that first month. Again, the 13th day of Nisan, what we now call Erev Pesach. They did everything that Haman had commanded to, you know, they told it over to all the nobles and all the leaders, right? Every nation according to their language, their writing, according to their language. It was all written and sealed with the ring of the king. They're going to send out Sfarim or books or whatever, these letters, sent out in the hands of the runners to all the Medinas and the Melech to destroy, to kill, to destroy all the Jews from child until old, little kids and women, on the same day, on the 13th of the 12th month, and their property, right, that could be taken for whatever they want. Pashegin haksav, the content of the letter, is that a law should be made in every land. Galui l'cham, it should be known to all the nations, that they should all be ready for this very day. Now, there's a big question, and the honest truth is, this is not going to be an easy answer. What exactly did Haman want to do? Did Haman really expect to kill all the Jews on the same day? There's no way you could kill them all in one day. Even when the Jews got to kill the Amalekim back, they couldn't kill them in one day. There's tons of Jews. What if they're hiding? What if a Jew decides that he's not going to be there on that day? So what is that? So according to the Chassam Sofer, Purim was named because there was more than one lottery, meaning it started in Yud Gimel Adar, and it was going to go on for however many days it took in order to kill the Jews, but it was Purim, not just Pur, right? So that was going to be the idea behind it. But yeah, it is strange. It's definitely, Hippo Pur is the first lottery that would be on Yud Gimel Adar. But there was more to it, and it would have lasted for longer, right, as it was going to be over there. That's the idea behind it right over there. Just like there was a seal on the thing down here, there was a seal up there in Shemaim as well, that everybody was going to be destroyed and that was going to be. Now, in Shushan, word spread really quickly. There was no question about the security in that area. It was the capital. And he knew that his forces were going to be way too strong for the Jews to be able to stage a revolt or try to go up against it or whatever it is. There eventually was going to be a day, and what the point of this day was is that all the Jews would have to lay down their arms, and all the police and all the armies were at their disposal to destroy the Jews themselves. Could the Jews get up and fight back? Yeah, but it's not going to happen, because if you have all the police and all the, you know, all the what's it called, the officers that are going against the Jews themselves, if that was the edict, there's no way the Jews will be able to fight back effectively. Maybe a person or two will be killed, but the Jews in essence were going to be destroyed. The runners, they went out quickly through the word of the king, and the law went out throughout Shushan Abir v'Melech, v'Haman Yashvili Shtos, they sat down to drink, v'Yir Shushan Nevocha. Right? That city of Shushan was Nebuchadnezzar. They were all confused. They didn't know what to do. And that day, many people went out to the Jews and started making fun of them, doing whatever it was, knowing that there was nothing to worry about. If the Jews are going to be killed in a year later. So you can say it was almost like a Kristallnacht. Later on in Germany, it was the same thing that had happened right then on the 13th. Mordechai Yodos Kol Ashenasa. Mordechai also knew everything that happened. Yikra Mordechai's Begadav, he tore his clothing, but Yabash Sakva Avery wore sackcloth. Don sackcloth and put on ashes. He went inside the city of Yitzhak. He cried out a bitter and great cry. So it's crazy. Mordechai then went to a kid to hear what pasuk he was saying. The kid said, don't worry about any fear that might happen all suddenly. Nothing's going to happen over here. He went up to another kid and he said, you can make plans and do whatever, but it's never going to happen, right? And the same thing, but no matter what happens, says the Kadosh Baruch Hu, I'm going to be with you. Mordechai understood that whatever is going to happen, things are going to happen, right? Kadosh Baruch Hu is going to take care of them. But he had to know how to take care of them, but he wasn't sure. He knew it was grave. He knew something had to happen now, and they couldn't wait until Adar. So he decided to take action right then. It was the 13th of Nisan. He decided he was going to do something right then. What's up?
Oh, nothing.
I thought you were going to say something right then. Anyway, that's that. By Avo, Adlifnei Shar HaMelech. He came up to the front of the king's gate. He ain't level Shar HaMelech, level Shuk, because you can't actually go up in front of the gate itself wearing sackcloth. That absolutely cannot be. He started crying him out loud. He wanted the king to hear him and ask him what was the matter. That was the point over here, right? But the king was getting drunk with Haman. He was sitting and drinking with Haman. Evo Gadol Yehudim, in every Medina, the place where the law of the king and the word came out to, there was great mourning among the Jews. Soma b'chi, they started fasting and crying. Mispeid, they gave wailing, right, or start crying out loud. Sakva efer, yutzel rabim, sackcloth and ashes were put upon everybody. In other words, everybody started going. They went into a panic. Some people started hiding their kids even then. They were worried about what was going to happen. Again, this only was on the 13th of Nisan itself, and we're waiting almost a whole year, 11 months for the 13th of Adar, but nonetheless, people were going to start a little bit early when it came to stuff like that. That's the idea behind it. Now, they started sitting together. Batavona Naros Esther Visarisel. All the the maid servants of Esther and all of her attendants came to Agidula. They told her what was happening. She got very, very scared. According to the Gemara, right, she immediately went into Nida. That's how scared she got. She'd never seen Mordechai like this. She had never heard Mordechai like this. She couldn't understand what was happening. She sent over clothes to put on Mordechai, and to take it off, right? The low-key bill, he would not accept it. Now, the reason why she sent it over to Mordechai is because she wanted to discuss it with him. And there was no way to get him in while he was wearing the sackcloth. So put on this regular clothing and come inside the palace so you could talk to me about what's happening. But Mordechai absolutely refused and said, I'm not taking my sackcloth off until I can actually go through. But she sent that for that reason. It could be that Esther was already, she's like, listen, what's the big deal? It's not like it hasn't happened before. People have tried to annihilate the Jews before. It's never happened. What do we really have to worry about? V'tikra Esther la'asoch, misurisei ha'melech. Esther called out to Asoch, who was one of the officers of the king, Asher Hemin Lifanel, that stood in front of her. Tzaveo Mordechai l'das mazeh v'almazeh. She commanded him about Mordechai to find out what exactly was going on. Now, this person, Hasach, and I know we mentioned Memucham before, might be Daniel or Haman. Here, Hasach was definitely Daniel. This was his name. Why was he called Hasach? Either because of being cut down from his previous greatness. He was the head, advisor. By the times of Nebuchadnezzar, Belshazzar, Evel Merodach, he was the head advisor. Now, by the Persian kingdom, he no longer had that. He wasn't the head advisor, and he was getting old. I mean, he must have been much older by now. He was part of the Churban. He must have been over 70, 80, 90 years old by now. So he had lost that ability. That's one that he'd been cut down from authority. Others say, that his words were listened to, that they like cut deep inside the kingdom, and that everything he said ended up going through, and that's the reason why he was called that way, right? But either way, Esther sent the message over to Mordechai and said, what's going on over here? What had happened? Mazev al mazeh, meaning for what exactly? Zev is zeh refers to what's happening by the Aseret Dibros and what's happening by all these different things. Is it because they were over on any of the commandments? Is there some specific mitzvah, she said, that the people have to work on? What exactly is going on here that allows for something like this to be able to happen? Fine. They yitzah asach Mordechai or rechov ha'ir to the street of the city, Asher lifnei Shar HaMelech, that's in front of the gate of the king itself, right? And he didn't, it seems that he didn't want the king's couriers to know that there was messages being sent between Esther and Mordechai. So he went around, he went into the street and then went to Mordechai from the street. Instead of coming straight from the palace, he went out into the street and came back to go to Mordechai as if there was another thing that he had to do over there. Mordechai told him what had happened. And also, the amount of money that was being paid to the royal treasury, right, in order to destroy the Jews themselves. He told over all the three kids and the message of hope, but he also talked about what the king said and what the king had done, and the bribe that was being given over, and what's going to happen over here. As well as a copy of the order, Asher Nitim B'Shushan Lashmidam, that was given over in Shushan to destroy the Jews, Nasan L'Haros, he gave to Hasach. The Haros is Esther, in order to show to Esther. And to tell Tzavazala and command her, to go to the king and plead the case. and to ask from him for her people, for everything that was happening over here. So that's the idea. You don't think that by going to the king instead of the king sending to you, because up until now, Esther had never gone herself to the king had sent for her, which could be considered a case of ones, of a case of a rape. Now it's Esther going to the king herself. Who says that it's mutter for a woman to be able to go willingly to the king, even if she wasn't married to Mordecai, a single Jewish woman to go to a non-Jew in order to sleep with him, in order to get rid of it? Who says that's mutter? Why is that mutter? To which Mordecai said, this is what you have to do at this point. This is the time to be able to save the people. That's the idea. Esther, Stephen, Mordechai. So Asach came back and relayed those words over to Esther. Batomer Esther, Lahasach. Esther said to Asach, "Vatzveil Mordechai, as you commanded to Mordechai, call the Amelach, the Amidinos Amelach, Yodin. Every servant of the king, as well as all the people of the king, they know this. As your kol yishvi'isha shi'avol Amelach lachatzar apinimis, any man or woman that comes to the king to the chatzar apinimis, the inner chatzar, Ashal lo yikorei that has not been called, achas dasa lahamis. The law is to kill them." Unless the king sends out his golden scepter. Then he'll live. But I have not been called for 30 days. You understand, this is literally going to kill me, said Esther. There's no way, I'm not even going to be able to get a word in. By the time I get a word in, I'll be killed. No one is allowed to go up to the king, not even the queen. You can't think like, well, you're the queen, you should have it. The king has a 1,000 people in his harem. There are tons of girls that are willing to become the queen. If I do this and I go up, people know what Ahasuerus is. He's an angry guy. He's a Persian bear. Something is going to happen here if I go up. It's going to be bad if I go ahead and do it. So she said, there's no reason for me to, that's the idea why she shouldn't go in whatsoever. There's nothing going to be there. And plus, she said, we have so much time. It's not like I have to do it today. If I don't do it today, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it the next day. I'll do it in a month. I'll do it in 2 months. Like, what's the problem over here? It's literally 11 months from now. She said, this is crazy over here. What are you going to say?
About this narrative bothers me. If Daniel is Hasaf, what's the point of him being there?
To show that even he was clueless on what to do. Even a person who is on this level, that had dealt with Nebuchadnezzar, with Evel Merodach, with Belshazzar, even he wasn't sure what to do over here, was not giving any advice to Mordechai and Esther. They were the ones in charge and nobody else was there. That would be the main idea of what Hasach was doing there. It also shows you what happened to Daniel during his time in the kingdom. We're going to see over here, Haman ends up killing Hasach for getting involved in this case, that Daniel ended up dying. There is a machlokas what happened to Daniel at the end of his life. One of those opinions that he was killed by Haman because he was delivering these messages, and Haman realized what had happened over here. But that's what she said. She said, there's no way for me to go up. They told over to Mordechai the words of Esther. It seems either Hasach was too ashamed to bring it over, or Haman had killed Hasach by this point. That's another line from the Gemara itself, right? But this is a crazy thing. Now, we all know, when a tzaddik dies, that's a tremendous kapara for the people. That was already the beginning of the kapara of the end, which was a tremendous thing for Klal Yisrael. Even though Haman did it to be able to kill Daniel, thinking that that was the time to do it, right? This was actually a very, very good thing for the Jews. Mordechai said to return, to give back to Esther. Don't imagine yourself that you will escape in the house of the king from all the Jews. Don't think you're going to be different. Because if you are silent at this time, there will be some type of salvation and relief that will come for the Jews from another place. You, your father's house, you'll all be destroyed. And who knows if this is the reason why you became queen in the first place. In other words, I know what your plan is.
You've got nothing to lose, basically.
Yeah, I know what your plan is, said Mordechai. I get it. You want your son to be king. You want to be in charge to make sure the second base of Mikdash is rebuilt. The 70 years are almost up. I get it. I get what you want to do over here. I get it. That makes sense. And you do have a good plan over here. And if you get killed, what's going to happen? Who's going to build the second base of Mikdash? Maybe this is the reason why you're queen. Maybe this is the real reason why. Maybe you were always made queen not to be able to build the second base of Mikdash, but in order to save the Jews. So I'm telling you right now, this is the way to be able to do it. But you'll be exterminated if you don't get involved now. It's clear that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted you in this position not to build the base of Mikdash, but rather to be able to save the Jews now. Get up there and go now before anything else happens. There could be another Jew that's killed. Hasach was just killed. We don't know how many Jews are going to be killed before that date. We cannot waste a single day in this. Go gather all the Jews that are together in Shushan. Fast for me. Do not eat, do not drink for 3 days, night and day. Me and my young maidens will do the same. And with that, I will go to the king. It's interesting. Vichain is a gematria of 72, which is 3 days. 24, 24, 24 is 72 hours. Vichain, with that 72 hours, I'll go to the king, even though it's not right. And if I get lost, I'm lost. If I'm destroyed, I'm absolutely destroyed. That's that. Okay? Now, here's Esther's plan. I'm going to act to Haman as if he's my best friend, and as if he is courting me. I'm going to act that way toward Haman. I'm going to make Achashverosh become jealous of me.
A little flirting.
Yeah, and I'm going to make Achashverosh jealous. I'm going to make him think that Haman is trying to take over the kingdom and use me as his queen. And if I do that, then eventually Achashverosh is going to be so scared and not know what to do, he'll kill me, but he'll kill Haman as well. And when he kills Haman, then the edict will be gone. That's the idea behind it. If you have to know, right, I need the Jews to depend on me so that that suspicion will be a real suspicion and people will whatever and go ahead and do it. That's that. Now, she said, fast for me, don't eat, don't drink. Fasts are a lot easier when you can eat and drink, no? It's much easier. If you fast for me, but eat and drink, that gets a lot easier. So what's the point? Fast for me and don't eat and don't drink. Oh, what else are they going to do? The pshat is, she was planning on starting this fast the next day. It was the 13th of Nisan, the 14th of Nisan, 15th of Nisan, and the 16th of Nisan, which meant that there were 2 days of Pesach. Remember, Yom Tov, it was Shushan, so you have 2 days of Yom Tov, right? Because you're talking outside of Eretz Yisrael. They were going to be fasting on the days of Yom Tov. There was no Pesach Seder that year. There was no Yom Tovim that year. She said, Sumo alai, I want you to fast for me. Al tochlu v'al tishtu. I know you should be eating the Korban Pesach. I know you should be going ahead. Oh, not the Korban Pesach, I'm sorry. You should be eating matzah and maror. I know you should be drinking wine. Do not have any of the dill rices, durabundans, nothing. Do not eat the dill rices. Do not drink the cups of wine, nothing. You're not going to keep the Seder this time. There's not going to be any Seder when it comes to this. And you have to fast that is going to be that way. And that's how we're going to go
also,
in front of the king.
It's a pretty significant thing to actually get all of the population.
In Shushan. It was only in Shushan, but that is a big amount, right? It was a big amount. The amount of Jews that were there.
Samach
HaMaveis?
Yeah.
With the Korban?
Yeah.
Oh, they stopped eating and drinking because of the Korban bias.
But they said you can't really do that because you couldn't get everybody to do that.
That's right, but this is that kind of stuff. I mean, that was because the Korban already happened. There's nothing you can do. Here, it's because you're going to die. So that makes sense then. You're fasting because you're going to die over here. Now, it wasn't only that, by the way. She also asked not only for the people to fast. The kids had to fast, and the animals had to fast. She had demanded that everybody should be crying out loud. I don't know how the kids were able to survive for 3 days without food and drink, right? Maybe there was something else. Maybe they fed them in some other way. I have absolutely no idea. But she asked for everybody.
By
Avor Mordechai v'yaskochosh v'tziv zolav Esther. So Mordechai left. Literally, he was over. He was over on Pesach. They were over on Pesach, and they did not do anything, any preparation for Pesach. He asked Kol Hoshet Zivzal, I love Esther. She did exactly what was supposed to be over here. And Mordechai assembled all the Jews in Shushan. He took 12,000 Kohanim. Each one took a shofar in his right hand and a Torah scroll on the left. They wept, and they said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what's going to be with the Torah? What's going to be when it comes to that? The Kohanim started crying in front of the people. Everybody started going crazy. The whole night, that 13th night, right, leading into the 14th day, they were all there, and it was going to be crazy what it was going to do. Okay, Nunu. According to one opinion, they were never going to do 3 days in a row. It was going to be a Monday, Thursday, Monday. But according to that opinion, it couldn't have been in the 13th, 14th, and 15th of Nisan, obviously, because, right, 14th, 15th, 16th of Nisan, because they wouldn't have had time to do Monday, Thursday, Monday. That wouldn't be able to do. Anyway, Vayibay Mishlishi. And Perek Hey, it wasn't the third day of Tovash Esther Malchus. Esther took on her queenly clothing. In Chazal, it means that she put on Ruach HaKadosh. She donned Ruach HaKadosh. She davened so much, she was able to have Ruach HaKadosh. This is on the third day. She stood in the chatzar of the house of the king, in the inner side, Nochah Beis HaMelech, opposite the house of the king. The king was sitting on his throne. It was opposite the door of the house. It was opposite the door itself, so she was able to see when it came to that. Now, I want to point this out over here. There are those that say, right, that as we said before, it was the 14th, 15th, and 16th. If it was the 14th, 15th, and 16th, then the third day was the 16th of Nisan, which means they already missed the first Seder, right? There are some that say that the feast that they had, the two feasts that they had, were the two Sedarim. But that's impossible. It was the 14th, 15th, and 16th because they would have missed the 15th already. It would have been the 16th and the 17th. It could be there was the 13th, 14th, 15th, and that really everything had been done on the 12th. That could be as well. But that's something that a person has to be able to figure out exactly what it was. It is seems to be a little bit of a steer on the Midrashim because it does say it was the 14th, 15th, and 16th, but others say that that third day was Pesach. Seems to be it was the first day of Pesach, what you did, whatever it was. But she did put on everything that was supposed to do. You had to pass by 7 doors to enter the king's palace. Miraculously, not one of the guards in any of the doors, when they saw Esther, stopped her and stopped her from going through. She was able to get past every single guard without them even asking a question. It could be, right, she looked at them threateningly. It could be that she acted with such confidence that they didn't know what to do, right? But whatever it is, Esther went ahead and went as soon, right, as soon as she could in front of the king itself. Fine. Some people say that there were malachim that were with her that acted as her guards, right, so to speak, that were going to be there, but that gets a little bit whatever it is. Okay, that's that. He looked at Ahasuerus, right, and Ahasuerus was extremely angry, but Esther still stood strong. As soon as the king saw Esther Amalka, right, standing in the king, standing in the chatzar, nasachem be'enav. So then she found favor in his eyes. The king sent out to Esther the shavit azov asher biyadei, the scepter of gold that was in his hand. Vatikav Esther, she came close. Vatikav brosha shavit, she touched the end of the shavit itself. That's that. Fine. What had happened? A malach lifted up Ahasuerus's head. A malach stretched out the what's it called, the scepter. A malach made it even further. Some say that even went 60 amos to be able to touch Esther, said Esther was able to touch it from where she was over there, seeing that type of idea. Vayomer lo amelech, according to one of the Medrashim, a malach slapped him in the face, which is also awesome. Vayomer lo amelech, the king said to her, malach Esther, Malka, what is with you, Esther the queen? Mapak shaseich, what is your request? Up until half the kingdom will be willing to give to you. What did he mean by that? What is in half of the kingdom I won't give to you? Half of the kingdom, the halfway point of the kingdom, is Yerushalayim. Everything but the Beis HaMikdash. I'm willing to give you everything but that. You can ask me for anything else, and I'm willing to give it to you, and that's that. Okay, so that's that. New. Batomer Esther, Imala Melech Toiv. If it's good for the king, Yavol Melech, the Haman, Hayom Elam Mishdash Shar Sisilo. I want the king and Haman to come today to a feast that I am making for him. Now, clearly she had this planned, because she can't like go in and just be like, I'm going to make a feast, and then all of a sudden go home and like, oh my gosh, we need food. That's definitely not what happened. She had this plan from before, and she knew what was she going to ask over here, but she specifically asked for Haman. Why? To get him jealous. Why is Haman coming to this feast of ours? Oh, Haman, he's a good friend of mine. He's somebody that I really like, right? That's the idea behind it. He wanted to make sure that Haman was going to be involved. He was hoping that there was going to be a drunken rage, and in a drunken rage, he'd get up and kill Haman the feast like he did to Vashti. Maybe that would be something over there, something around there, yeah.
The irony in this whole thing is that the Purim story started because his wife wouldn't come to him.
Exactly, and now the queen is calling him.
Yeah.
Right, and all through a mishta. The mishta is throughout. The Mishnah in the beginning, the Mishnah between Ahasuerus and Haman, the Mishnah over here with Esther, and another Mishnah that's going to happen, and then the Mishnah at the end when the Jews celebrated what ended up happening over here. So that's that. So he said, Vayomer HaMelech, Ma'aru is Haman, hurry Haman, lasses Dvar Esther to do what Esther wants him to do over here. Vayavol Melech Haman ala Mishnah Asher asa Esther, and they both came to this thing itself. It's funny, this was the Pesach Seder, either on the 15th or the 16th, right? It's the Pesach Seder. The only people to eat a Pesach Seder that night were Haman and Ahasuerus, and that's that. Rav Wolfson says the reason why is to enter some bit of Kedusha inside them so they'll be able to make good decisions. Because once they have a little bit of Kedusha, right, everything will be good. So what's up?
They're actually eating matzah?
See, the way it would be...
That would be too much. That would be...
Rav Wolfson says it the funniest way. She said she came in, and she said, you know how there's like Thai food and Chinese food, right, and Mexican food, etc. Well, why don't I make you Jew food for tonight? Did you know that tonight is
a horrible idea? They're gonna they're planning to annihilate them.
Yeah, exactly. So we want to keep their culture, right? Let's keep the culture. Let's get it together. Let's put it together. It's not so bad. And let's have a little chag the way that the Jews do. Still not giving away her position of what she is entirely, right? But being willing now. I know, eventually you think to yourself, like, oh man, that's got to be the worst meal ever. Like, matzah and mur, like, why would you do that?
But matzah was like a lot.
Right, and she probably served meat with it, which means she served shawarma. She served gyros, which I always thought for years was gyros. Because why would you spell it that
Jewish
way? But regardless, it was a gyro. No, it was. That's a corn. That's Hillel's sandwich was a gyro.
It's not gyros?
Not gyros. I know. I'm shocked also. It bothered me for years. You ever see that, you know, on Ari Crown when you turn a left on Main and it said Dengio's Gyros? Yeah. Always thought it was Gyros. It's not. It's Heroes. Never knew that.
Not even spelled phonetically.
No, not at all. But my wife told me that as I was going through. And she's like, what did you just say? Gyros? They're Heroes. That's how you spell it in Greek. I'm like, oh, I had no idea. But no, we had the first one. This is Hillel's Korech. Korech was taking the matzah, putting in the vegetables, and putting in the meat and eating it all together. That was a gyro. That was a gyro sandwich. That was a shawarma. The Jews originally, in the times of the Beis HaMikdash or the Mishkan, could. So for all of that time, for almost 1,000 years during the times of the Mishkan, the first Beis HaMikdash, second Beis HaMikdash, they had it. Oh, no. But by Esther, she's serving a Haman and Ahasuerus. Remember, she's still fasting. She's not eating at this meal. So she could serve the meat and it wouldn't be a problem. So she served them what would be the, so to speak, the Korban Pesach. Yeah, whatever. It didn't have to be. It could be just a regular feast, a regular meal, and that's what they were having. Right, but the point is that let's put it together. Esther stood around and served them, giving all the food itself. Now, she made sure to flirt with Haman the entire time, giving whatever it was, and he obviously was wearing her beautiful clothing. In the middle of the feast, what is your request? Should be given to you. Again, everything up until the base of Mikdash. But Haman is here. He's the royal treasurer. If you need any money, he's the one to be able to give it to you. What exactly do you want over here? What's going to be? Here was the problem. The reason why she was delaying is because Haman still had his avodah zarah on top of his neck. For that reason, this was called like a base of Udazara, and she lost her Ruach HaKodesh. She had no idea what to ask for and did not understand why it was lost by her. Chazal say that in Tehillim Chav Beis, when David HaMelech says, Eli, Eli, lama zavtani, rachok mishuasi divrei she'agasi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why have you forsaken me? She was referring to this moment right now when Esther went in, right, to the king. This is in the future, obviously, but Esther walked in and had no idea what had happened to her Ruach HaKodesh. She said, why have you forsaken me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I'm trying to ask for the request and I can't do it. She doesn't understand what's going on. And tomorrow, I'll do exactly what I'm going to do. In other words, she said, I can't do it right now. Something's wrong over here. I need to make sure that something's there. And I want Haman to come again tomorrow to make more jealousy and to make him even more jealous to make sure that was going to be over there. Yeah.
So what's the deal with the She'ela and the Bakasha?
She was delaying. That's the simple idea. She's delaying. She'ela si, Ubakasha si. She kept doing it to try to delay to see if she can get some type of Ruach HaKodesh, and she got nothing. So on Pasuk Tes, Haman came out that day, Sameach v'tov lev. According to Rav Wolfson, that means Simcha and Tov Lev are high levels of Kedusha. Haman left the party with unbelievable levels of Kedusha because he had that, and he was around Esther, right, type of thing. That's the idea behind it. She was completely, now it's amazing. You know what happened after this? Haman went home and sees Zeresh. Together with Zeresh and impregnates Zeresh. Zeresh has a child. Zeresh ran away. She ran to Bnei Brak. And those kids are the kids that grew up in Bnei Brak. And Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, right, was one of the descendants from these kids of Haman that ended up converting in Bnei Brak. All from this meal itself.
Story.
Zeresh?
Yeah.
Yeah, not until once Haman is killed, the very next day, right, after that day, she runs. She's not killed. And she runs, and her kids, it didn't have to be her specifically, but if it was her, she was pregnant, and that kid grew up in Bnei Brak, pretended to be Jews their entire lives, they would get away with it, and those kids eventually led to Rav Shmuel Bar Shilas, which is an amazing, absolutely amazing medrash, but that's brought down. Once again, Mordechai did not get up and did not move from in front of me. Malei Haman al Mordechai, Chema. Mordechai, Haman was filled with absolute anger, because again, no matter what was happening, he was so happy and everything was all good. Look at what's going on over here. And he's sinning and he's like, what is going on? How in the world could this be? It must be, right? It must be that there's still something wrong. But he's Apik Haman. Haman held it all back. He didn't want to say anything right then. Vayavoa basically came to his house. So he sent and brought in all of his loved ones, his friends, as Zeresh Ishto, as well as Zeresh's wife. He wanted to kill Mordechai immediately right there. But he was worried. He wasn't sure how the king would react. And the one thing that he wanted more than anything else is to kill all the Jews. Killing Mordechai would assuage him right now. But what happens if Achashverosh looks at him and says, why did you kill my trusted advisor Mordechai? Even though Mordechai is going to be killed in a year, nonetheless, why would you kill such a person? He might have been angry that he had done such a thing. And therefore, what can I do to make sure that even the king agrees that this should be? By Safarlam Haman is Kvod Ashro. Haman then told them all of the honors of his riches, Robanov and all of his kids, Veskosha Gidlo Amelach, and everything the king did to him, Veskosha Niso, Allah Sarim Abdi Amelach, and everything that he was lifted above, all the Sarim Abdi Amelach. I think Haman liked talking about himself. I think that was pretty obvious, right? Chazal say over here, Verov Banov, he had 208 children. That means that even Zeresh didn't know how many kids he had. He was around with a lot of people. The reason why is because Haman was a good looking dude. Blonde hair, blue eyes. He was a Malik. A Malik is blonde hair, blue eyes, or at least red hair, blue eyes, right? That's, we're dealing with people that are really, really good looking. So Haman was able to be together with a lot of women in the Persian kingdom that were, you know, that were not exactly the same. So he had kids all over the place. So altogether, according to Chazal, he had 208 kids. So he told everybody about that. Verov, the gematria of 208, Verov Banov, right? We have that line in what's it called? In Bo's Tzor, Robanov Akinyav. That's a different reason altogether. But regardless, that's what it is. Verov, Vav Resh Beis, even though it should be spelled Resh Vav Beis. but it's not Virov. That's how many kids he had altogether. That's the idea behind it. She said, like, what's going on? She said, Yomra Haman. Even Esther, Amalka, called me to be with the king. Nobody else was called. It was just me. And even Amaro, I'm being called. But none of it is worth it to me. None of this is worth it to me as long as I see Mordechai Yehudi sitting by the gate of the king itself. Every time I see Mordechai. And the reason why, according to Chazal, is again, because if he's an Eved, Mashkan Eved Kanarabo. So everything he owns, everything he does, goes to Mordechai. Mordechai hasn't called him on it yet, but that's part of the scary point over here. What if Mordechai calls me out on it at some point and says that I'm going to be over here? He said, I'm going to be able to take care of things. It's crazy. Nobody can take me down. Nobody's going to be over here. But you know what's really crazy about this pasuk? Okay, there's a sefer called the Bnei Yisachar. We learn it right after this. So the Bnei Yisachar has all these name combinations of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he uses for every month. In other words, Yud Kei Vav Kei is a Pashut combination. That's what you have for Chodesh Nisan. And each one is a different letter combination. There's different letter combinations. So there could be Yud Kei Vav Kei. There could be Yud Hei Hei Vav. There could be Yud Vav Hei Hei. Right? All the different letter combinations. If you look at this line, V'chol Zeh Einenu Shovet Li. There is a Hei Vav Hei Yud. Hei Vav Hei Yud. This is the letter combination for the month, I forget, I think it is Tammuz, if I remember correctly. Hey Vav Hey Yud, because the time of Din, it's when the Egel Azov happened and everything. It's the exact opposite of Yud Kei Vav Kei, it's the exact opposite. Chol Zeh Einenu Shovet Li, it's if Haman is saying, none of it is worth it to me if I don't get what I want. And the entire source behind Tuma and getting me this idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is when you think about yourself. Narcissistically, you don't think about what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from you. That's what Haman was doing over here. Anyway, Vatomelo Zeresh Yisho and Zeresh his wife, Vachol Avav and all of his loved ones, Yasu Eitz Kavoa Chamishimama, make a tree that is 50 amos high. I don't know if it means a tree. It means like a big piece of wood that's 50 amos high. How you're going to find a tree, a piece of wood that's 50 amos high, that's 75 feet. I'm not so sure I fully understand how he was going to get that. Now, granted, they had a lot of people, you know, that had that. You know, in Vancouver, there was an entire, there's a huge park called Stanley Park over there. And the reason why it's called Stanley Park, and the reason why it was given over to the government, and the Canadian government always uses it as a natural park, is because when Vancouver was discovered, it was discovered by a bunch of people who were, you know, people who are boatsmen. They came and they found they needed their mast broke. And they came to the first place where they could find, you know, a place to fix their mast. And off of Washington and Vancouver, there's a lot of tremendous, huge forests there. Stanley Park, though, is a forest that is right off the ocean. They're able to dock and immediately take these trees that are huge, absolutely huge trees, and they were able to make a massive mast out of it. The problem with the mast is obviously it has to be very, very tall, and you can't piece it together. It's got to be one huge trunk. And they found it over there. So where he found this tree, I have absolutely no idea. I don't know Persia well. I can't imagine that there are very many trees in Persia aside from like...
Ship.
Yeah, but that's crazy. I mean, but he said you should find a 50 amma tree to bring it in. Chazal tell us it was from the Teva, which is also weird. That's weird. That's from Hari Ararat. Where did they have that from? But regardless, make it 50 amos. So Voker Omer LeMelech, and in the morning tell the king, Yisrael's Mordechai love. Let's hang Mordechai upon him. Ubowim Melech LeMishta, Sameach Vayita, Sameach. And then you'll come to the Mishta. You'll come to the feast. Right? It is closer. You should be happy. Right? Vayita Vador Luna. Mahaman Vayasa Eitz. Haman did exactly that. And he did. And he made the tree. He said, like, there's no reason. Let's make it into a festive era, make it all whatever it is, and stuff like that. Okay, when the gallows was finished, Haman climbed up to the top of one of the Medrash. Almost as a joke, he tried on a rope just to see if it was the right fit. And a baskol came out and said, it's the right fit, Haman. Nothing to worry about. It is the right fit. Okay, that's that. There were assassination plans. Haman had plans not only to assassinate Mordechai, but eventually take over Achashverosh and Esther. Again, because of what happened with Bigson and Sarish, he was waiting for this to happen over here. So again, the only person in the palace that knew about it was Harvona. And Harvona was still keeping quiet. What time do we have? All right, we'll be able to start a little bit over here, Parak Vav. Let's see what we can do. On that night, the king's sleep was agitated, disturbed. He wanted to bring the Sefer Zichronos, the book of records, the chronicles, and it would be read in front of him. And that was what he wanted to do over here. This is what he wanted to do. After building the whole scaffold and everything like that, Haman went to take one last look at Mordechai. He was wearing sackcloth, and he was teaching a large number of children over here. Summoning all of his men, Haman took all those children and threw them into prison. He was going to kill them before taking care of Mordechai. After hearing that their children were in chains, so the mothers rushed to bring them food, their kids, water and food, etc. Eat before you die. The children, they placed them in their hearts and they swore that they would die fasting and that they weren't going to eat anything whatsoever. They sat in prison and they were sitting there and they started crying out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That was the moment that the decree was annulled. where HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, fine, it's not going to happen.
These were Jewish children?
These were Jewish children. In the middle of the night, they were all learning with Mordechai. And in the middle of the night, after, you know, when they were crying, etc., that's when Ahasuerus, his sleep, started to have one vivid dream. He saw Haman walking up to him, removing his crown and his royal robes, and grabbing a sword as if to kill him. He woke up in a cold sweat, and he realized this is not an idle dream. He realized that Haman was plotting against him, and something was going on. So he wondered. He could not figure it out. Now, this was the night of Pesach. Some say, well, it was for... Some say it was the first night of Pesach. Others say it was the second night of Pesach. This is the night of miracles, where miracles happen for the Jews and great things happen. So the king woke up, drunk, exhausted. He had already been together with Esther, right? And he realized he was barely able to keep his eyes open. He should have been completely, completely asleep. And now he was wide awake, right? Thinking that Haman was trying to destroy him. And then he started saying to himself, what's going on? He wondered if he was drugged. So he called in all the bakers, et cetera, and everything, and they said no. He said, maybe there was another plot over here. Maybe Haman and Esther were involved with one another. Now he started thinking about them together. He's like, why was Haman invited over here? Could not figure it out. So he said, why wouldn't anybody tell me, though, if there was a plot? Harvona knew about it. Why isn't anyone telling me about it? He couldn't figure out why this wasn't being said to him. He said, maybe it's because I've been ungrateful for people who have helped me in the past. Bring in the Divrei Yamin. Has there been a plot to kill me in the past that I forgot about, that I don't remember, right, where someone had saved me and I hadn't done anything whatsoever? Okay. Fine. That is that. Fine. They looked in the Sefer Divrei Yamin. As we know, what happens over here. Vayimotze Kosuv, right, Asher Higin Mordechai, big son of Asherish. And they found written that Mordechai had told him of a big son of Asherish. Everybody who knows, the reason why there's an Aleph and a Vav over here is because originally it was written by Shimshi, the scribe, as big son Osherish, to make it look bad in the eyes of Mordechai as if they didn't know who was doing what. Shnei Tzrizim, the two officers of the king, Mishomer Asaf, the people that were guardians of his Zorsha, Bikshul, Shalach Yad, the Melech HaKashverish, they wanted to kill him 6 years ago. Right, that's how long it was, right? It was 6 years ago when that had happened, that Mordechai, Vayomer HaMelech, Ma Naaseh Yikar HaGedulah LeMordechai HaZeh. What greatness and what honor have we been given to Mordechai about this? Vayomer Na'arei HaMelech, Meshortzav, and the Na'arei HaMelech, they said, Lo Naaseh Mo Davor. There was nothing that was there. There's some great Midrashim over here where Shimshi, who was the scribe, kept skipping over the page, but whatever he turned to, it would turn to that page. And then when he wouldn't read it, like a malach read it out loud, or the book started reading itself out loud. There's some great, great midrashim over here. Regardless, nothing had happened for him. Nothing was given over to him. And the reason why is simply put, right, the people started telling him, I mean, obviously your dream is very understandable. You feel ungrateful. You feel you've been ungrateful in the past. You feel like someone's trying to kill you. Nobody wants to tell you because they know they're not going to be rewarded for it. So he said, who's in the courtyard? I hear something going on in the courtyard. What was happening? Haman was making the gallows, and it was loud and noisy. Things were happening in the middle of the night. But Haman bala chatzir beis ha-melech ha-chitona. So he said, Haman had come to the chatzir of the beis ha-melech ha-chitona, the outer one, le'imor, le'melech litzol, says Mordechai, in order to tell the king to hang Mordechai la'et, asher hechen lo, that he had prepared for him over there, right? He knew that somebody was there, but he could not figure out what had gone on over here. Vayomer na'arei ha-melech elav, Haman. It's Haman standing in the chatzir. Now all of a sudden, Vayomer HaMelech, Yavo. But let him come to me. Haman, Ahasuerus had already started having his suspicions. And now all of a sudden, Haman is sneaking around the palace at night, in the middle of the night, in order to go do stuff. What's Haman doing over here? He had two suspicions. Either he's trying to kill me in some way, like Bigson and Sarah tried to do in the middle of the night, or Haman is secretly getting together with Esther. And he's wondering, what in the world is going on over here? That's the idea behind it. And Ahasuerus starts realizing that Haman is in a plot to be able to kill him together with Esther. What would you do, Haman, with a man that the king desires to give honor to? Now, this is a test. It's a test of the American broadcast system to try to see what Haman would say. If Haman's going to say, like, I don't know, give him a lot of money, that would make sense, right? But what kind of answer is Haman going to give him? Who would the king want to honor more than me? There's no way that Haman would want to honor somebody more than me. So therefore, he said exactly what he was thinking.
It's an interesting line. You never see that in scripture a lot.
Chazal say that this is how we know that Megillus Esther was written Baruch HaKodesh. Because how in the world could Esther and Mordechai know what Haman was thinking in his heart? So later on, they say, well, it's not a proof, because they could guess what he was thinking, right? But nonetheless, you're right. This is one of the proofs that they use that it was written with Ruach HaKodesh. All right, you're going to have to stop over here. We're up to Pasuk Zion over here. But good stuff. We're up to really, really good stuff here.